Welcome to MS Excellent Edition of ARG Presents. I'm your good buddy, Amigo Aaron, joined by a man who just this very week will celebrate his 50th birthday. I give you the birthday boy, a.k.a. the Brent.
Hey, how's it going? Not quite
going
50,
on, man?
Aaron. You're
What's
not.
That?
Are you even 50 at this point? Old man Aaron?
Me?
Old
no, we're talking about your birthday.
Aaron!
We're talking about your birthday, my friend.
Old man Aaron!
Listen to that, my God. You just... You're killing that song, Dad, that's for sure. God. How are you this week?
I am well. How about yourself?
I feel like double secret super crap, but I'm moving forward like a man, like a true champion, my friend. Man, I'm excited, too. This show helps me get fired up, Brent, because...
This was a good show.
Yeah.
Well, I hope it's going to be a good show.
Well, we'll see. This week, Brent, we are jumping in the deep end of the pool, my friend. The deep end. We're not screwing around with any MSX1 like a chump. We're going for the MSX2.
When you can double it up, why wouldn't you?
Exactly. Now, of course, we spun this last week on the wheel. Brent, we covered the MSX1 way, way back. In episode 94, so it's been...
That's often called 94.
Listen, I could call it what I want, Holmes. Do you recall anything about the original MSX when we covered that you liked or disliked?
I remember I played the Penguin game that was pretty okay.
Yeah, I kind of liked that thing.
I don't remember what game you picked.
We didn't have a problem with the... It's like we hold a grudge. I played Magical Tree, by the way.
That game was
pretty
horrible.
Fun game. We don't hold a grudge when it comes to these things. So,
yes, we do.
Well, no, with this one we did. I don't recall.
No,
any
no,
bad
not
feels.
This one. No.
Yeah. So when MSX2 rolled into town, I was pretty excited, Brent.
Absolutely.
But I honestly don't know. I didn't know much about the differences between the two. So of course, you know what I do when I don't know? I look it up. You know what I mean? And try to figure out what's going on. So just a tippy-toe dive into the pool of hardware on these MSXs. Now, the MSX, the original one and the second one, both products of a weird developing relationship with the ASCII Corporation and Microsoft, man. And this is one of those machines where they sort of made the technology and then they licensed it out. You know what I mean?
Oh, yes. So,
it's funny to look at the licensing. If the manufacturers of the original MSX, there's lots of them. But the MSX2, there weren't nearly as many. But you'd recognize the majority of these. You got Philips, Sony, Sanyo, Mitsubishi, JVC, Toshiba, Panasonic, Canon, Yamaha. Right? These are all pretty standard big-time players.
Big-time names.
The old one you had, I mean, you had the MSX1. It had probably... at least double that many people that were fooled with it. You also, I should mention, Daewoo folks also made MSX2, a place called Talent, that's what I haven't heard of. But a lot of people made the second one, but the first one had way more people manufacturing it. This is the same kind of deal that the 3DO did. You remember that? What do you think about approaching a console or a computer with the licensing like that?
Well, a quick sidetrack. Do you remember when I owned a Daewoo and we hauled a pinball machine in it?
I do.
That hatchback.
Is that the same Daewoo that the car people also read? You think that's the same people?
Oh, yeah. I would imagine so.
That's kind of neat.
But back to your question. I think that's a horrible idea.
What?
I think even though you have the same base components, to make your console different than the other consoles, manufacturers are going to do something. And then when you have those differences, you've got developer hell, where developers don't know what to develop for. So I think that licensing out stuff is just a horrible idea. I've never been a fan of it.
Well, I don't know if it caused any compatibility issues. I mean, it didn't cause any really in the 3DO, for example.
Well, it's not about necessarily compatibility issues. I'm talking about, like, if one's keyboard is this super awesome, snappy thing that you can do great things with, and then someone else makes one that's got, you know, like a membrane keyboard, and if keyboard is your main source of control... or a possibility of. Same thing with sticks. If one company makes like a great stick and then all everyone else has these garbage sticks, you have to develop for that. And when you can't develop for it because there's 8,000 different variants, it's bad times.
Very good. Well, I hadn't thought about that, really. You're probably wondering what the changes are between the MSX and MSX2.
I did. I wondered that before the show.
Yeah, well, good thing I looked it up. We've been in trouble. Processor-wise, you've got a this MSX2 has a 3.58 megahertz Zilog Z80A or equivalent, it says, processor. I think the real big deal is the MSX2 has a video display coprocessor in it. The V9938. Of course, you've got a RAM upgrade. This thing had a variety of options in terms of optional stuff. You could have extra audio RAM, digitizers, light pins, you know, cool stuff like that. Remember light pins? No one uses those anymore, but those were neat. I always thought. Did you ever
remember light pins, but and this is often a issue with computers. Yeah. If it doesn't come with or consoles, I should say, if it doesn't come with the console, almost no one's going to develop for it.
Yeah.
So I'm sure all that cool stuff was completely underutilized.
The MSX2 would always come with at least 128K of memory. You know. So you had a little extra memory. Now, these things could all be upgraded, and I mean, it's hard to go into like the PAT specs, you know, these things. But you had a lot of upgrade options, but I think mostly that graphics coprocessor that was the big difference between the two. Now there are other MSXs as well. There's a plus, and a couple other ones there. So but there wasn't like there was a ton of them. The funny thing is, I was reading here that of course, this was ASCII working with Microsoft, and Microsoft was developing the operating system for these things, right? And the operating system that they put out for the MSX2 is almost exactly the same as DOS 3.3. If you remember using DOS,
I mean, why wouldn't Microsoft not do that?
It does seem like it's not the worst idea.
Yeah.
Eventually, Microsoft just sort of, from what I read, it seems like they just sort of lost interest in the project and then just didn't fool with it anymore. So kind of neat, though, to think that Microsoft had something cooking in Japan. It's funny to think that, this machine got fairly popular. And I say, I'm talking about the MSX line. It got fairly popular in Japan. They also released this in Europe, and I believe they also released this is another one that got released in like Brazil. You know, it's funny how Brazil gets tacked into some of this stuff. It's funny. I was telling you before the show. I'm actually I've got an Unamiga, Edu's Unamiga for the board that simulates an Amiga with an FPGA, and he's adding an upgrade board that supports some other machines, and the MSX is one of them. So I'm kind of excited to get to really dive into the MSX world. So this was like a little like sampler this week to get in there. Now there's a lot of games that's not true. There are some games that got released exclusively for the MSX2.
There's literally a dozen.
Well, there's more than a dozen, but there. A lot of these games got released for everything and supported the MSX2. And yeah, as I look over the list, a lot of them are like arcade ports. You know what I mean? So and of course, Japanese RPGs aplenty, that sort of stuff. But there's probably some hidden gems in there that are fun. Yeah. Now, so and of course, we were tasked with finding a couple of these bad boys. Now, I will admit, my MSX knowledge is low to nil on these things, but I tried my best to find something that looked interesting. This is another week where I just basically guessed. Did you have any insight? How did you pick your game?
Well, first I went to the exclusive list because I wanted an MX2 exclusive.
Right, me too.
And then I was like, I actually flipped through about 8 or 9 of the games, and you had already picked, so I was feeling pressured. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to play a type of game that I know Aaron's going to hate, but I used to enjoy these things. I want to see if I still enjoy it. And that's how I picked. Well, I picked something that we never do on this show. And we should, because it's a huge part of gaming. And I know that we don't because of our time restraints, but I still picked it.
We're going to kick off the show with your choice, Brent, such as it is. Tell the fine folks what you picked.
I went with Pumpkin Adventure 3, The Hunt for the Unknown. What?
Okay. I'm not saying nothing. Just roll on.
So, Pumpkin Adventure 3, the third game in the Pumpkin Adventure series, which I know nothing about. So, this game kicks off, right? And it has a little bit of a cinematic, and then it has a scrolling text screen that goes on for a millennia. But let me summarize what the scrolling text screen says. The year is, 2077, and we are in Los Angeles. Life's pretty good, And then all of a sudden, monsters start killing people in the streets, just straight up hunting them down, murdering them, leaving them in alleys. So the U.S. government is like, you know what? This sucks. Let's do something about it. So they created an organization, SODOM. And that,
say it.
Sodom.
That's right. That's what we created. That's the organization.
Right. I can't remember exactly what it stands for, but it's basically a secret police force that is trained to hunt these things, hunt these monsters. And guess what? It goes horribly. Like, it works for like the first few days, and then all the specially trained people start getting killed and running off because the monsters are too powerful. So they have to switch to Plan B, and Plan B is far more lucrative. They have a scientist who scans the idols of time and finds people who have dealt with overwhelming odds and come out on top. And they found these three people that had defeated Lucifer back in the BC era, like 347 BC.
Lucifer.
So they're like, all right, we're just going to go and rip them from time, bring them to Los Angeles and have them fix our problems. Yeah. And that's what they do. And then they accidentally, along with those three people, they accidentally take one of the three people's girlfriends with them too. So, but she's not a hunter. She's just like a normal schmo. So they stick her in with the science guy. It's like, yeah, you hang out here, you won't get hurt. There are pockets of Los Angeles that are protected. And there, I mean, like city blocks, not like suburbs. I'm talking like city blocks. And that's where you start out, in the safety of one of these city blocks. And you have Jeff Tate with you. He is the team lead for Sodom. And you have to explore this area and try to start clearing out some of these monsters. So, to do this, Jeff joins up with you. He's like, all right, I'm going to help you learn the ropes. We've got a hotel that is being overrun by monsters. Let's go take care of it. So you and your team, this is the beginning of the game, and this is chapter zero, and so hopefully I'm not going to spoil anything for those who want to play it. You start out and you go to the hotel, and Jeff is like, all right, we got to clear out all these monsters. And you start out, your characters have no equipment, and all of them can cast a heal spell, and your healer can cast a mass heal spell, except he doesn't have enough mana to cast it. And in fact, half your crew doesn't have enough mana to do anything. You are literally, when you start the game, punching the enemies, right? I was so confused. You go have all the points of history, and this is the three people you come back with. And like your team lead, Jeff Tate, has a blaster pistol that one-shots every enemy you come up against. But you're running over there and hitting them with your fist, and it's pathetic, right? And it took me a while to understand what this game was going for. Because it is a turn-based RPG. Released in 1995 by Sunrise Foundation. And it was created by UMAX, which is a team of like 8 people total to do all of it. I'm talking, does the music, does the graphics, does the animation, the layout, the maps, everything. It's a small, very small team. And the people that you pull from the past are actually the heroes from Pumpkin Adventure 2, who did indeed defeat Satan in that game. I have no idea what happened in Pumpkin Adventure 1. No idea. So I'm going through this hotel, and there's puzzles to solve. I mean, it's rudimentary stuff. Just find the hidden object. And there are people to talk to. And like, I came up to one person that said, you know, up until the last like 50 years, this hotel didn't have any beds. And I was like, didn't have any beds? What in the world are they talking about? Well, then you start to kind of figure out. I mean, there are hints before that. But then you start to figure out this game does not take itself seriously. This is a almost slapstick style RPG where you find weapons like butter knives or cake forks. And you just, your guys talk, your heroes from BC time talk like surfers. So it's not a serious RPG. It's not a serious theme or tone. It's all this kind of satire of itself. And I knew for sure when I got to my first boss and it was King Kong that, yeah, this game is just poking fun of itself and it's having a good time doing it. What'd you think of it, Aaron?
I'm glad the game was having a good time. I'm glad it was poking fun of itself, because now I'm going to poke fun at it. Crap. Hated
it. It's not crap.
Listen to me. You didn't explain what your characters look like. Why don't you tell the people about your crew? You've got a bishop who has a... He wears this huge upside-down cross bishop hat everywhere he goes. Right. Then you've got a guy... I want an explanation for why that guy beat Satan. He looked like he should have worked for Satan. Then you've got the guy that looks like he came straight out of Kung Fury. He's got he's got the crazy hair, the headband. He looks like a tool. You've got a crew of idiots. You've also got, like, I like the bit where they take you to the headquarters. It's a mile underground in this city, and you go through and your boss looks like Rufus from Bill and Ted.
Yeah.
All right. Exactly. So it wasn't subtle, the humor in this. And when I say humor, like it was written. I mean, this, the opening monologue on this, and you can see it. I've got the video going. It goes on for like 1,000 years. I tried my best because I make fun of Boat for skipping these things. Don't skip the opening, Boat. You're missing all the game. This thing, the opening goes over like 10 minutes. Yeah. And then there's another 20-minute tour of everything that you can do nothing in. It's horrible. I mean, and I know that's the way these games are. And guess what? It sucks. The opening sucked. I didn't like any of that. Getting around in the town, that sucks too. It's hard. It's hard to tell how to get around into places. Just getting around, the little alleys and stuff, graphically, it's hard to get around. But I played the game. Because I'm a good soldier. I went in here and played this game. Loaded it up. And I tried to have fun with it because it is it's dopey with lots of dumb guy humor, you know. I tried to get into it. So I picked up the assignment. I actually found the hotel. By the way, the hotel is called Faulty Towers, which is another whack. That's another joke. It was an old TV show to BBC. And you go into Fawlty Towers, and you're supposed to go and kill all these bad guys. By the way, your guys that are taken from history, they're totally cool with it. They don't have a problem. It's like saying here, what? It's like asking somebody for a mint. That's their reaction. They don't have any problem. Then so you go in a hotel to kill stuff, and I played this. I beat everything in the hotel. Okay. The combat, which you didn't go into, is sort of this JRPG.
Yeah, it's like turn-based RPG.
Turn-based style. Listen, this is calling this combat is being very generous. It's watch the picture, like, it's lame. I hate this kind of combat. Not good. And you're right. One of your characters is a stud, and three of them suck. And so I would split the combat up. I would have three of my guys fight one guy, and then I knew the fourth guy could kill whatever he fought. So I would just have, that's how I would do it. But you do level quickly if you go through the whole hotel, you know, but it's slow. It's just, you're hitting the fire button. I mean, you get to the point where everything dies, and so you just sit there and just go like this. Just hit the button continuously. Just like, man, please let this end. But it won't end. I didn't like it, man. I didn't think it was even clever. I didn't think it was funny. You know, it didn't do it for me. I thought the humor wasn't there. I didn't like the combat. I didn't like the options. I mean, is it the worst thing I've ever played? No, it wasn't the worst thing I've ever played, but it just wasn't anything special, I guess is what I'm saying. I don't understand the name. I'm sure it comes into play somewhere down the line, but I don't know why it's called Pumpkin Adventure. I didn't know. I thought maybe it'd be Halloween-based or something. You know, I don't know. The guys walk around. I mean, you could tell this. It does remind me of, like, if someone said, listen, we're going to make an RPG game on, like, an old DOS machine, this would be it. Now, I will give a couple kudos to it. The music is good. I enjoyed the music.
The music's outstanding.
It has an ad lib quality to it, or it's the trumpet they use and stuff with some of the songs is good. I mean, now does the music fit the game? No, not really. It's like basically being trapped in a Japanese elevator for a couple of hours as you sit there. But I mean, you hear the song. It's a good song, but it does, after a while, it gets old. You know,
it changes
ability
up.
Yeah, a little bit. I don't know how far you played. I played this for 3 hours and I hit the wall. I'm like, I'm done.
Did you? Okay, so you got to King Kong.
I got to King Kong.
Okay.
What did you think about King Kong?
I thought that was a fun fight. I thought it was a good boss fight. Okay, let me, now that you know the particulars of the game, real quick, here's what's good and what's bad about it. The good parts. This is a classic style turn-based RPG. If that's your thing, you're in for a good time because it's exactly what it is. It looks like you can have tons of enemies. I fought up to 5 enemies at one time. It is what it is. You don't get a ton of loot. In fact, you never get items from enemies. You always get items from chests. So there is an exploration aspect because you want to find the chest to get your item upgrades. But if it's a classic RPG style, turn-based RPG style, where the game has some issues for me is the graphics are such a way, and the graphics are good. I don't think the combat graphics are so good because, there you fight things on just a black background, and that's always annoys me.
And you don't see the enemy you're fighting; you just see some an icon of them.
That's
in the hotel. I was fighting falcons and hellhounds, but when you saw them in the hallway, it just looked like a cloaked figure walking around real fast.
Yeah, that's standard fare though. It's not random combat. The combat is if you engage or the enemy engages you, so that's a plus.
You have no choice.
No, yes, you do. You can avoid tons of enemies.
It would come. It would. You couldn't. You couldn't get around them in the halls. If the halls are too
narrow.
No,
that's not true. It was. I mean, there were obviously some passageways where you had to engage, but there are plenty where you can avoid the enemy if you want to. Here's my problem with the game. You aren't at a straight down viewpoint when you walk around. You're at the slight tilt, which means the complete bottom half of the screen, it obscures your character, as well as any like roof ledges or things like that. So there are plenty of times when you're walking around when your character is not on screen because he's behind something. And they use this as a mechanism to hide items or to hide passageways. I hate that. I hate when games do that. Problem number two I had with the game, like I said before, when you fight enemies, you fight them with no background. So it's just a black void. While the art for the things you fight is okay, they're nothing. It's nothing stunning. Having a black background is just off-putting. It does allow you to adjust the speed that your characters walk and the speed at which combat happens, which really helps on travel, because you can get there lickety-split. You run at like warp speed. In fact, I couldn't even put it at the fastest. It was too fast. But this game is... This game is an RPG that doesn't take itself seriously, that has some jokes. Some of them hit, a lot of them miss. It's just the type of humor it is. That it plays a good RPG. It plays a competent RPG. So if that's your thing, if you like turn-based RPGs and you're looking for something with a future fantasy setting where you can just enjoy the conversations and the wacky conversations and the crazy characters and the ridiculous situation, this is a fine game. And the only way to play it is MSX2 that I'm aware of. So, you know, if this sounds like something you would enjoy, I don't feel like you have to play 1 and 2 to understand the story of 3. It seems separated enough.
No kidding.
The characters themselves are from the second game, so maybe that you'd have some connection with them that way, but it looks like they were taken out of history before they fought Lucifer, because that's why they don't have any of their powers. At least that's my guess. I don't know. Never actually says it in the thing. Game is completely in English. So yeah, I think it's an okay time. I thought this was an okay game.
You know, I've never understood these games. The appeal of these games. This is a perfect example of it right here. You know, where is the fun? I keep hearing about all these great games. It's got all this great dialogue that make people cry and break down. And they love these characters. But I'll tell you what, I've never played one yet that did that. And this one sure as heck doesn't do it.
It's because you don't give these things enough time.
That's not true. Brent, no, the dialogue in this.
Because some
like,
of these games.
It looks like Luke. My 11-year-old son got liquored up and then wrote this. I mean, it's so stupid. Now, I'm going to give it I assume that the translation, but I mean, their jokes and stuff, they come across, they're just horrible. I mean, the dialogue, it's so stupid. Like, it's not for adults. If this is marketed for kids or something, I can understand that, but it's not for an adult. You know, no one's going to sit down and think to themselves, I'm going to have an adult evening here playing this game, because it's stupid. The combat is stupid. It's just, I don't get these games. I do not understand them. I've never understood them. And this is just another one. It's not like this was any better or worse than anything else I tried. I just don't personally get it. I've never understood it. I mean, yeah, are the graphics okay? They're okay. Can you sort of see what you're doing? Yes. You know, but I mean, when the rubber meets the road, it's dumb. It's a dumb game. And, you know, saying this is a pretty decent adventure. No, it's not. Don't lie to the people. It's not decent. It's dumb. It's a dumb game. You know, the combat, everything about it, it's just, it is low end. And that's
okay,
all I got to say about it.
You understand, Aaron, that not everything has to be super serious RPG world. It is dumb. That's the appeal. The dumbness is the appeal. And the combat that you keep ragging on, turn-based combat, some people love turn-based combat. It is low stress. It's more about tactics. No. Were there major tactics in the portions that we played? No, because you're not advanced far enough. it doesn't take anything like character equipment stuff into account. But normally, in turn-based combat, especially when you get in the upper echelons, it's all about strategy. Figuring out what enemy is weak to, what enemies you need to heal at this time. There is a strategy into it. And it's unfortunate that you've never played one of these long enough to see what they have to offer. Now, sometimes I'm in the mood for
hours. Hours. I couldn't believe I played this game at least as long as I played mine, if not more, because you had to. I tried desperately. I was begging to figure this out. The game was not complicated. I tried to give these things a chance.
This game, if you are not a JRPG fan, a turn-based RPG fan, this game's not going to win you over. Okay?
And if you don't
this
like reading, the opening, there's a ton of reading past the opening section of reading, where you go through this thing.
Of course.
And you didn't mention it's an RPG. Like, for example, there are certain places where there are terminals, and you can go through and read all kinds of stuff about what the city and what's happened and what's going on.
Yeah, there's tons creatures of lore.
But it's boring,
I
read
didn't
a
do
book.
That.
You know what I'm saying? I don't want to sit there and read. Listen, anytime a movie comes on with a 10-minute opening scroll, it's crap. That's a joke in cinema. And so this thing having a 10-minute opening scroll, I knew right away I was in deep trouble. Thumbs way down.
That's for pumpkin adventure. Those are stupid comparisons.
Carve up this pumpkin, y'all. And then when it starts to rot, throw it in the garbage can. That's what I did this week with my pumpkin. Done.
Yeah,
that's a done.
This game is okay. If RPGs appeal to you, this one's okay. So what? Okay, Aaron, what did you bring to the table that was so spectacular?
Well, I will say this: this week it's not even close game wise, and you're not, and even you, as goofy as you are, aren't going to fight me on this one. And I will admit I had no background for this game. I just saw it. It looked pretty cool, and I grabbed it. The game I chose this week is Usos, or the full title of the game, Treasure of the Usos. Now, I'm not pronouncing Usos correctly. There's that little squiggly line there has you pronounce it a different way, but I'm not 100% sure how you pronounce Usos or Ushas, but I'm going to call it the Treasure of Usos. So what is the treasure of Usos? Not easy to say, for one thing. This game published and developed by Konami. So that right there instantly tells you something. It's Konami, and this is back when they were kicking it, and they were getting a lot of good stuff out. This came out in 87 and is what you would call a single screen. I would call this an action puzzle game. Let's go there.
The puzzle platformer.
I would say it's a platform, but there are puzzle elements. So you talk about backstory. This thing, I had to do some work just to look up what was going on in this game. I will say, much like Brent's game, this is mostly in English, which I'll get to the non-English parts in a minute. And there's also a patch for this game that was to make it pretty much fully English. So this game revolves around, you work for a professor, right, at the Oriental History Department, okay? And they're in financial trouble. And he reads in the paper about a statue of Usos that has been found in India with these markings on its forehead, right? And so he sends you out, the two of you out, to try to get these things, because it's basically, this is like the whole premise of this is it's a fundraiser. They need money at the museum, and he sees money in getting this stuff going with Usos. So he sends you out. Now, you've got one of two characters you can pick from when you start the game. You've got Wit and Kles. These guys have different abilities, which we'll get to in a moment. So when you start off on your journey here, this game gives you a choice as to what you're going to actually do, which is a welcome choice, I might add. You, at the very beginning, you get to pick what you're going to do. When you pick your character and pick where you're going to go, you are off. And your goal is to get through these tombs to recover the item at the end. When you recover all the items at the end of the four tombs, you can go to the fifth tomb to actually uncover that jewel from that area. So there, and then once you clear all the areas and get all the jewels you need, you can go have the final battle, which I didn't come anywhere near that. This game is sort of a throwback. I mean, like I said, it's from 87, but it's a flip screen thing that doesn't scroll. You just go from screen to screen. So it's sort of like Montezuma's Revenge or something, where each room has its own puzzles. The one difference in this game from a lot of games is that the things you do in one room will carry over to another room. For example, you have the ability to push around blocks, and there are some instances where you'll push a block from one room to another room, and so or throw it off a ledge, and then you can use it to access an area in the room below it, which is it's kind of neat. You also the two characters are very different in terms of the way they play. So Kles has a kick attack. Right. And he's faster, but he can't jump very high. And then Wit can jump really high and has a ranged weapon, but he's weak. And on top of everything else, this game also has a mood system. And this is where the Japanese comes into play. The mood system is represented by this kanji at the top of the screen. There are four different kanji. I've actually got a translation of them here to tell you what they do. They actually are joy, anger, sadness, and ease. Okay, by ease is like being cool. These icons will appear throughout a level, and they're intricate to the game because what you'll need to be in a different mood depending on situations. I'll give you an example. With Wit, if you're in the joy mood, that means you've got a triple shot and a double jump, but you can't push blocks. If you're in an anger mood, you've got a flame shot, but you push blocks faster. If you're sad, you can't rapid fire and you can push blocks faster. And if that ease, you can shoot rapidly. So they each do different stuff. They allow you to open up different aspects of your character's abilities. They're also important for accessing certain areas and fighting the end boss, because the end bosses often will require you to be in a certain mood to fight them, which is kind of weird if you think about it. If you're gonna, like, for example, if an end boss requires you to be in an easy mood, you know, and it's funny because when you're at ease, your guy will kind of like looks like he's whistling, and when they're sad, it looks like they're crying, and sometimes when they're angry, they do look pissed off. So I mean, you could. Even without being able to read the kanji, you could tell what their mood is, but it helps if you can. There's a patch that turns that into some sort of more English easy thing to read. And really, the funny thing is that's the only kanji in the game, except for, you know, when you come across those parts of the game where the kanji pickups are, and then that matches the thing on the top. But I mean, really, once you play this for a while, you'll get the picture. You won't really need it. Your guy has a life bar. It's a generous life bar. Both guys start with the same amount of life at the beginning. So, you can play for a while. I'd say as far as Konami games go, because I was afraid this was going to be a real butt-kicking type game. But that's actually, you get lots of time to go in and figure out what you're doing. A lot of the enemies are comprised of these guys. It sort of reminds me of the enemy generator in Gauntlet. They're usually, it's like a cross or something. Sometimes it's a skull. But what it is basically a thing that generates a bad guy. Unlike those other games, you can't destroy them. And so it's going to keep generating bad guys. You just sort of have to leave, basically, when you see them coming around. You can shoot them or karate kick them. I did find the controls in this okay, not great. The truth of the matter is that the fellow that does the kicking is much more difficult to use in close combat. Just because you have to time it right, or you take damage, and eventually that damage just wears on you, and it'll kill you. You can also upgrade your abilities after a spell if you get money, which is cool. You uh, you also have to contend with a lot of, and this is what got me killed more often than not. There's a lot of platforms that move up and down and left and right, which is fine. But if you actually get caught up under one of these, it'll instantly kill you with the, regardless of your hit points, because you get crushed. Did that happen to you a lot, Brent, when you were playing this?
Absolutely. And when I begin my furious rant on this, I'll go over that in higher detail.
I want to hear this, because I think this game, I really honestly think this game is a real hidden gem. I was stunned. I mean, I'm not a huge like Castlevania guy or anything. I know this game's got a lot of press, but this game is right up my alley, man. It reminded me a little bit of something like I said, of a Montezuma's Revenge or something. I like games where you jump around on platforms and stuff. I think the platforming in this is pretty fair. I mean, like I said, you've got one guy that can't jump very well, and so he's a lot more challenging. A lot of times with the fellow that can't jump very well, you have to position blocks in certain areas. You have to so you can jump on top of them, you know, to get places. I thought the music in this was really good. The soundtrack of this thing is sort of a very well thought of. I believe they said that the same guy that did the Castlevania music did the music in this, which that would make sense since it's a Konami game. So I thought the music was okay. Actually, it's funny. One of the things I will say about your game, I thought the music was pretty awesome. And I thought the music in this was okay, but I didn't think it was like, it didn't blow me away. I thought it was pretty good. But there are codes that you can skip entire levels in this, so you don't have to go through, like, when you go through a tomb, which is a series of four tomb raids plus a final boss, you can skip those if you have the code. So you can skip, you know, depending on where you left off. So you're not dedicated to having to play this thing the whole way through over and over, because it is a long game. I mean, you can be playing it for quite a while and to get there. But I like the amount of gameplay you're going to get here. I mean, I didn't even get off the first set of tombs, much less get to the fifth set or the final boss. That'd be four sets plus the boss. So it's a difficult challenge. There are some subtleties you have to get used to. And the enemy, the continuously respawning enemies is not my favorite in a game. It's okay. You've got flying enemies in this that can be a real hassle to play. If you get killed in this, effectively, it says you got captured and you get to switch to the other guy, which seems great, but if you're not very good with the other guy or if you're in a situation where the other guy is a more of a detriment, then it can be a problem. And I will say, of the two guys, I mostly played Wit, because he had the gun and he had better jumping. But like I said, there are situations where the other guy is better. For one thing, pushing around blocks and stuff's a lot easier with him. Wit is really weak most of the time. It's hard for him to...
Okay. You're starting to repeat, so I'm going to jump on in.
Okay, go ahead. Get in.
This game almost so close with just a few tweaks could be an absolute 10 out of 10. It is a challenging but fair platformer that has some incredibly ingenious aspects to it. The mood system, picking up the different icons, I wish it was done slightly differently. I wish that instead of just being, the words, you know, sad or happy or whatever, I wish that they would have went with a little more detail on that. Something you only sort of mentioned, it's not that you have to be in a certain mood to fight the boss. You have to be in a certain mood to open the door
right
to get to the boss.
Right.
And the reason why that's a pain in the butt is you don't know what mood you need to be in until you find the boss door.
Yeah.
That, I find, is a tremendous flaw, because it has
you
gotta
go hunting
all the way to the boss door, not knowing what you actually need to get into it. And then you've got a 1 in 4 chance.
Yeah.
And if you don't have what you need, then you have to go hunting for it. So it means a lot of backtracking. I wish they would have had something where you could have had at least some kind of clue, maybe something scrawled on the door, like a little riddle that would have made it, you know, something you could have possibly understood what you were supposed to do before you got to the boss door.
So I agree. I think they tried to artificially like lengthen the
they
game.
Absolutely,
really, they
did.
Don't need to. Because this game's pretty long. I agree with that. That really does. I don't like having to go all the way back through. And some of those, sometimes you can't even hardly find the right mood to get to icon.
Yeah.
And then there's always the possibility you're going to accidentally grab the wrong one when you're way back, which happened to me. It irritates me. Yeah. So yeah, I agree. I'll give you that one.
The the next thing about this game that I found kind of annoying is one character, Wit, who has the gun and the superior jumping skills, is infinitely more valuable than your close range combat guy. And it's not that I just wasn't good with close range combat. The jumping aspect of it, of your other character, is so much better than the martial artist that he's just a detriment.
I assume
also,
that later
when you
on
get
in the
hit
game,
in this game, you fly like crazy. So much so that if you can actually use the knockback as a way to get to platforms you're not supposed to get to.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
I did that.
That's not good. That's unfortunate because it is, I mean, even if they would have said Wit gets knocked back this far and then the other guy, the martial artist, doesn't get knocked back as far, that would have been at least a kind of a neat twist. Would have made the martial artist a little more useful in some situations. But the absolute killer for me on this game, the absolute reason why I quit, because I made it all the way through the first world, and I made it halfway through the second world.
How was the boss in the first world?
Kind of lame. This game has a lot of repeat enemies and repeat bosses. There's only so many boss varieties, and when you fight the statues that actually holds the treasure, you get four keys, and then you fight the ultimate thing for the statue. They're kind of lame, unfortunately. The bosses for the keys are much better. But the absolute killer for me in this game is the one-hit kills. When you are given a vitality bar, and the vitality bar is very tough. You have to use your coins basically to heal and to buy upgrades for your people.
Yeah.
So it's a balancing act of, well, do you want to be able to run faster or jump higher, or do you want to use that to heal so you can, you know, continue on? The capture system, by the way, genius. But when you're playing a game that has a vitality bar and you die from one hit, and I'm not talking about you fall on spikes or you fall in a bottomless pit. These are being squished by just platforms, normal platforms. It's so frustrating because it didn't have to be that way. They could have just hit your character and spit them to the left or right, and it would have made the game exponentially more enjoyable. My very first death and my very last death were both the same way. I got hit by an enemy, which pushed me under a platform, which killed my character instantly.
Yeah.
That's not fun. And it is that aspect that holds this game, that makes this game good, not great. Also, you can farm money, and which kind of makes the upgrades meaningless. I wish they would have avoided that. I farmed something like 5,000 coins, which was enough to upgrade my characters to full, plus have plenty of money to heal. And it only took like 7 minutes. I found a spot where you could just go up and down and just keep getting a 10 coin. I just did it over and over and over.
You'd think they'd had a time limit. I noticed that myself.
You can't have a time limit in this type of game.
Well, I guess you're right. But it is odd that they would add an element of money earning. I had the exact same thought because I had tons of cash. It wasn't hard to get. I thought to myself, well, I wonder why. Much like the fact that the martial artist is the weaker of the two guys, I just assumed that somewhere ahead that there would be a point where that would change.
And so, he is much stronger.
But I mean, let's face facts. You don't want to use him.
No.
Also, why does a martial artist have a crappier jump? You think he should have a better jump?
Well, and the martial artist can get one of his things, gives him a roll attack, which is the most powerful move in the game.
Because it makes you invincible. You're basically indestructible when he's rolling.
Yeah.
But you got to be careful where you roll or you'll get smushed.
Right. Well, that happened to me too. Since you aren't allowed to keep these power-ups because the game forces you to get certain power-ups to advance, which I don't really have a problem with that. I just wish I knew what I needed before I don't have to go all the way to the end to find out what I need. However, all that said, this is definitely a game I think you should check out. I think this is something that is worth getting an MSX emulator for to try.
Yeah. Or Wii Virtual Console, if you've got that.
Or one of Wii Virtual Console. I think this is good enough that you need to check this out.
I agree. Now, just not to compound some I didn't like, but the enemy placement, some of the enemies it's a real hassle. You know, what is it with Konami and the knockback from getting hit at thing? Yeah, I did, right, everything you said I did. Using the hits to get the levels you weren't supposed to get to, I did that, which is fine. But, I mean, it is a hassle to get knocked back into stuff. And I never liked that in any game. In this game, you do fly back. I mean, there's a lot of knockback in this.
Yeah, the knockback is really ridiculous.
And I also agree with you on this. I mean, at first, I can understand why you were getting killed. I assume this is like a big, heavy stone thing sitting on you. But it happens so frequently because of the knockback and because of circumstances that it does become irritating. That's what it's based facts. Especially when you get a good game going, man.
Yeah.
You know, and what's the worst is like when you've got a real good game going and you're way into the level when it happens, and then you've got to bring in that karate guy. It's like, oh, here we go. And you know it's going to be trouble. The hand-to-hand combat in this, like I said, I had real difficulty doing it efficiently. Like,
yeah, it's
consistently
poor.
Without getting hit. You know what I mean?
The hitboxes have issues.
Well, also, his kick is real. I mean, he's tiny, so he didn't kick very far.
Yeah.
You know, and so you
I still think this little... is. I still think this was an excellent game.
Yeah.
Like I said, I got to, I think it was either 2-2 or 2-3, and I think there are a total of 4 worlds.
You did great. You did real well.
And I enjoyed my time with it until I got killed. It was a complete screw job. And, you know, after that, I didn't want to play anymore. It doesn't mean I won't go back to it because I had fun during my time.
Yeah.
But when a player feels like they got ripped off, I mean, the game didn't beat me because the game was better. I feel like I lost because the game cheated. That's bad game design.
This is a prime game for save states too. Really,
if you want to do that, I don't want to do that in a game.
I
don't want to have
to do that. I do like the fact that there are codes. You know, I guess you knew about the codes.
I got
those
one.
Help. I should mention that something else, a lot of the places in this are real life places. That's kind of cool. Even the codes are real life places, which the passwords, which is kind of neat. Now, here's some wackiness I found out just looking around. So you could actually, this thing had a couple of cartridge slots, okay? And so sometimes, I guess people sit around doing this. You could have another cartridge stuck in one slot, and it would affect what you're playing. Did you know that?
No.
So, for example, I was reading here. If you have F1 Spirit, which I almost picked that one. If you have F1 Spirit in a cartridge slot, and you're playing Usus, you will always have the special power. Kless can walk over gaps, and Wick can jump midair all the time. If you've got Nemesis 2 in, you could continue with the F5 key after a game over. If you have Metal Gear in, you'll lose half the energy. You only lose half your energy. And if you've got a game called The Maze of Gallius in, you'll get 100 coins at the start of the game. Now, that is wacky. Think about
that. That's pretty awesome. I completely endorse that.
I mean, it's really unusual. That's very strange. I've had a couple of reviews. These are sort of more modern reviews that were after the fact. The Games Machine gave this 88 out of 100. They were fairly impressed with it. And ASM An 89 gave this an 80%. So I would say my thoughts on it would lie somewhere in between. I will say I did try to – did you try to find your game on eBay for chance?
No, there's no chance.
I looked on eBay for mine. I didn't find it. But I did look to see what an MSX2 was going for. And they are available to be shipped out of Japan and all points east. You know, like I saw them shipping out of like – I think I saw one in like Poland and stuff. So, I mean, these were fairly popular in Europe. You can get one of these things, a working one, Brent, for starting out the low end, right, $163. That's not counting the shipping you're going to pay. And you can, and I saw them going ranging as anywhere in between $163 and $500. And a lot of that depended on the extras you got with it, the condition of it, boxes and whatnot. So, and these are pretty handsome looking units. I mean, I think they look nice little wedge machines. They're good-looking units. I can see why they're popular with collectors because they have a very modern, sort of sleek style to them, really, if I'm honest. And I did try several. Did you try any other MSX2 games while you had this thing up and running?
Yeah, I tried a few. I mean, I think the games we picked are of high quality for the system.
Yeah,
I know you didn't like my game, but, I mean, the art and the sound was good. Yeah. I played some other stuff that was really bad.
Yeah.
Just flipping through different games. And then I've also played some stuff that looked like it would have been interesting if I would have stuck with it.
There's a pretty big disparity on this system between what looks good, what, for example, like, I thought my game looked awesome. I mean,
it looked pretty decent.
Top shelf. Then I tried, I saw that amongst the offerings for the MSX2 was Outrun. And you'll recall that Outrun on the Amiga, for example, is Double Secret Death.
Yeah.
And so I tried Outrun on this and it sucked. It was also no good. It was really, I was surprised how poor it was. So, you know, your mileage may vary on these. But yeah, pick yourself up an MSX 2 or 1. I think you'd probably have a good time wheeling around on it.
You know, Aaron, do we have any Discord reviews for these?
We didn't have any.
that's kind of heartbreaking. But I really think your game would have appealed to a very wide audience.
I was surprised, but I don't think a lot of people are into the MSX. I was surprised, too, because there was a lot of banter to play it. But no, we didn't get the Discord action this week. We'll give her a shot next time. But what we do have this time is some sweet wheel action, bro. Let's fire this sucker up. So, Brent, this week we added two items to the wheel here. We've got the Retro Rewind piece, one of our favorites from before you came on, the SG-1000, and the extra piece this week we added was Fight, our Fight piece, which we'll get into if it comes up. Let's spin this sucker. What are you hoping for this week?
You know what? Something off the wall. I'm sure we've got something just completely off the wall in there. Let's do some off the wall.
Here we go. Oh, my. Well, this should be a crowd pleaser, Brent. It's Amiga versus Atari ST, Brent.
Oh, my.
Haven't done a versus for a while. So tell the people how the versus pieces work, Brent.
Well, Aaron, are you going to take the mantle for the Amiga, I assume?
You know, I think I should take the Amiga mantle since I am Amigo Aaron. I'll go with the Amiga, and I'll let you have the ST.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, kind sir.
I'm going to win.
So, next week, we are going to come with our argument of why our system was better. The Atari. Now, Aaron, I think you should be limited to an Atari 500.
You mean an Amiga?
Yeah. I think you should be limited to an Amiga 500.
I'm down with that. No problemo. Right.
And I will tackle the virtues of the Atari ST, and we will come back and just prove with video evidence that our system was the superior computer.
I like it. It sounds good to me, man.
It should be a romp. Now, I see a very research-heavy week in my future.
I don't. So, Brent, before we put this thing to bed, we've got several pressing announcements. I'll kick the announcements off. Coming up in just a few weeks, it's amazing how quickly it's come upon us, Brent. It will be, let's see here. It'll be November 27th, just at 9 a.m. We're going to kick it off. It's the ARG Thanksgiving Marathon, Brent. Yes. Tell the folks about the marathon.
We are going to take your selections, and I will admit that I did overwrite the file of your selection, so I'm trying to piece that back together.
You moron. Aren't you a computer professional?
Your selections, add them to the wheel, and every single piece of them will be spun, and we will be playing them for Thanksgiving. It is our way of saying thank you for all the support, the charity work, all the charity givings that you, the viewing and listening populace give to support the Amigos and to support ARG Presents and to support, you know, the channel at large.
Well said. Well, how did you erase the file?
I overwrote. It was a Google. I was on Google Docs and I started typing something and I just feverishly just highlighted everything and typed what I needed to type and without realizing what I was doing.
I think I speak for all the listeners when I say, you dumb.
I know. And I'm trying to piece it back together. I've been trying for weeks, really. So if anyone wants to resubmit what they gave for Thanksgiving, I will happily accept it.
You're killing me. I also want to mention that coming up just a couple weeks after Thanksgiving, this will be December 12th at 5 p.m. It will be the second meeting of the International Computer Club, Brent. The first meeting was very well received, and so we're going to tempt fate and have a second International Computer Club meeting. If you are a member of the ARG Discord or the Amigos Discord or Pixel Gaiden Discord or the Sprite Castle Discord, which we're all one big Discord family, feel free to roll over to the International Computer Club section of the Discord and sign up. The sign-up sheet's still available. I'm going to leave sign-ups up for just a smidge longer, probably another week or two. And we will be, and anything goes. If you've got a video, a presentation, if you just want to rant for a few minutes about something, if you want to chair a small discussion, whatever you'd like to do, it's a fair game here as we go around the table and just talk about what's going on internationally in the classic computer area. It's sort of our interim thing to do since a lot of us can't get it together with our real computer clubs because of the coronavirus. So it'll be a lot of fun. Again, if you are in our Discord, feel free to sign up. And if you don't want to sign up or aren't even in our Discord, you're still welcome to join us. We'll be doing it on Zoom, Z-O-O-M, and the link will be provided the day of the show. So it should be a lot of fun, Brent,
yes,
to do International Computer Club.
One thing I want to mention, ARG Presents has shifted our paradigms. We're working our parallels, and we are now part of the Patreon network. And we have just posted a new goal for a monthly show where you and I throw down old school in a high score challenge or one-on-one fighting challenge or whatever might be the monthly choice. If that goal is hit and maintained, we are going to produce that show on a monthly basis. And I assure you, it will be over the top action.
Yeah.
Aaron and I have already went over a few ideas.
Yeah. If you want to see me drop the hammer on Brent again,
so if you would like to support the show, you can head over to patreon.com/ARG Presents. Give the page a look. I'm slowly building it up. I am not well versed in Patreon, but I'm trying to learn.
Yeah. Yeah. Just make sure you don't erase anything, Spudhead.
I know, man. I know.
All right. Next week, it's Atari ST versus Amiga. There's going to be another beatdown. It's going to be an old-school, biblical-style beating as I put the boots to Brent in the Atari ST. So if you want to see a good old-fashioned stomp down, tune in next week. Until then, I bid you all good day.
Pumpkin. Thanks for joining us today. We really hope you enjoyed the show. Special thank you to Duncan Styles for our vector graphics and Bartbit for our closing music. We want to say hello to our podcast listeners, our YouTube subscribers, and our Twitch chat. A big thank you to all of our supporters. Would you like to keep ARG spinning for as little as $1 a month? You can do so at our new Patreon page at patreon.com/ARGpresents. Just like these fine folks. Xenon Canine, Jerry Dennington, John Dykeman, Hermsky, Retroalgae, Mitsuyama, Dave Velociraptor, Chris Fools, Bernhard Lucas, Steve Rathmussen, Frodo NL, The Slow Norris, John Schaller, Gary Heather, Terry Howard, Anthony Jarvis, Olaf Hope, Roldlow, Jason Warnes, and Graham W. Vetke. Don't want to explain another credit card bill? That's okay too. You can support us by leaving us a positive review on Spotify and Apple iTunes. Have an idea for a wheel piece? You can email us at argpresents@mail.com. We film live every Sunday at 9 a.m. EST. Hope to see you there.